We're on a mission from God.
And now for something completely different.
This is Pastor Jolly John Lekumsky. I'm coming to you from Northfield, Minnesota, where the weather is just about as close to perfect as you can get, Matt. Like 72 degrees yesterday. It finally stopped raining. That's the only thing. We've really had so much rain. We've had flood conditions, but now it's just beautiful. I won't ask you what the weather's like down there because I imagine it's probably still in the 80s and 90s. But what I do want to, you need to tell people about the excitement you've had the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, thanks, John. Yeah, Pastor Matt Clark here from Ascension in beautiful South St. Louis, where on my laptop right now, all it says is temperatures to rise tomorrow. So that's what we've got down here in St. Louis, John, in August. So you're right. In the past couple of weeks, I've been somewhere that's been a little cooler, which has been a nice break during the St. Louis summer. But we traveled as a family to Great Britain. We went to England and to Scotland. And we did that primarily because my wife is finishing up her PhD at the University of Bristol. So that's in the city of Bristol in southwest England. So we were able to spend a few days there. She was able to meet with her advisors, with other people in her program too, which she just loved doing. And then we also, as a family of four, went and saw different sites too. So we spent some time in London and York and Bath and Edinburgh is where we ended up, and then we flew home from there.
So Matt, what was the most exciting thing you saw? Because I've never been to England. What was the most exciting thing you saw while you were over there?
You know, for me, it was the cathedrals. We went to Westminster and St. Paul's there in London. There's a beautiful, the York Minster in York, England. And then, you know, many of those cathedrals, the Church of England. But up in Scotland, in Edinburgh, it's St. Giles Cathedral is the big one. And that's a Presbyterian, actually. So a lot of Presbyterians up in Scotland.
St. Giles. I must have missed that one.
Yeah, I know. Well, where is he in the Bible? I don't know. We'll have to figure that one out. But get the concordance out. But yeah, just the history that's connected to the cathedrals, you know, built over generations and generations and over centuries even sometimes. And the way they tell the story of all sorts of stuff, but primarily the story of the gospel, the stained glass windows, the statues, it's beautiful. Now, one of the kind of somewhat disappointing things was, you know, a cathedral like Westminster Abbey. Boy, there's a lot of statues that are dedicated to people too. so many people buried there, and statues of all sorts of political figures and writers and others. It almost gets to the point where it distracts from what hopefully the main focus is Jesus, right? So I hope I didn't offend any Englishmen by saying that. But boy, there was a lot of extras in some of the cathedrals in addition to those things we usually associate with worship. But boy, still, that was probably my highlight, John.
Well, I think part of that is because our history is a history of where the church and the state are separate. Whereas for them, the church was always part of what the government was doing, especially as they wrestled to change from Roman Catholicism to Anglicanism and everything. But, well, anyway, this is not, this is, by the way, wrestling with the basics. We should probably point that out at some point, but not wrestling with history. But, yeah, we're glad to have you back. And in the midst of all this, while you're over there, what happened, Matt?
While you were there? Yeah, thanks, Sean. Yeah, while we were there in Scotland, received a call to serve as a pastor at Trinity Lutheran Church in Springfield, Illinois. So now, basically, you know, to briefly discuss the call, John, since you brought it up, for us as Lutherans, at least, now I have two calls. So the call to serve as pastor here at Ascension, certainly, but then also to serve as pastor at Trinity. And so right now, deliberating that call prayerfully, we were able to pay a visit to that congregation. They were very kind and welcomed us and showed us around and kind of gave us the inside scoop on things. And so now prayerfully considered where the Lord is leading us, where we can best serve and use the the gifts that he's blessed us with, and also consider our family situations too, and where we're at, and all those things as a family of four too. So I, for our listeners, boy, just please keep me in your prayers, keep our family in your prayers, if you would. I keep the congregations of Ascension and Trinity in your prayers as well. And seeking, as we pray in the Lord's Prayer, that the Lord's will be done.
And I want to emphasize this, because a lot of times we record way, way in advance. In fact, sometimes it's like 4 or 5 years in advance of when we actually air. So if the material seems dated, that's what it is. But in this particular instance, we're recording right before this show will broadcast this coming Saturday, sometime August, whatever it is. I can't remember. I'll tell you right now, it will be airing on August the 17th. So seriously, nothing will be decided by that time probably. So do please keep Matt in your prayers. It's always and we take it really serious as pastors, because like you say, we don't believe these are calls from men. These are calls from God. And we certainly want to do what pleases God. All right, let's get back to what we've been doing this summer, which is the summer of Mark. We had the story of the feeding of the 5,000 the last couple of weeks. And now what we'd like to do is the story that comes immediately after that. And what I find interesting in this story is it ends with this verse. It says, "For they did not understand." Okay? And I thought it was interesting, because as I read through this story about Jesus on the water, I didn't understand a lot of things either, Matt. So I'm going to share with you some of the things that I didn't understand. And can you help me? or am I beyond help?
Well, we'll find out, John. Let's see what those questions are.
Okay.
We'll wrestle with that together.
All right. So let me give you the first question. This is Mark 6, verse 45, for those following along at home. Immediately, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side, to Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd. Okay. So this is what happens immediately after the feeding of 5,000, as it says immediately. And it's interesting, the Greek there, he made, the implication is he kind of forces the disciples to get on the boat and leave. Yeah. Not that they wanted to, but he kind of forces them to go and to go to the other side. So this is kind of funny, because I'm asking you, but I preached on it. You were out enjoying haggis in Edinburgh while I was doing this. But any thoughts about that? Why was Jesus so concerned about getting his disciples out of there? And why would the disciples maybe be reluctant to get out of there?
Yeah. My one thought connected to haggis, first of all, is have a dram of whiskey scotch before you eat the haggis. That helped me.
So now we know why they're really into the scotch. It's because of what they eat. You got to have something to drink before you can eat that. So
I kind of prime the pump a little of the scotch. All right, sorry, John, but getting back to your more important question, I think Jesus wants some alone time. That's my guess, at least in part, because as you pointed out immediately, so that kind of tells us to look maybe at what happens before this. So before this, they're kind of bouncing back and forth across the Sea of Galilee. And then finally, I'm going back to verse 36 and 30 and 31, Jesus tells his disciples, "Come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest a while."
Yeah.
So they, you know, he wants to rest. They get in a boat, and it seems as though people are watching them in the boat, running ahead to be on the shore when they get there. And then that's when Jesus has compassion on that crowd, when he sees them and feeds the 5,000 ultimately there. So really, they didn't get much rest time at all. Their planned rest was interrupted. And so now, once the crowds have dissipated, those who ate the loaves were 5,000, they ate to their full. So immediately then, he made his disciples get into the boat and dismiss the crowd. So he sends the disciples away even. And the very next thing Jesus does is he goes up on a mountain to pray. So I'm thinking that Jesus, in part of it, wants some alone time. He wants some time to get away to a desolate place and rest a while, as he says earlier in verse 31.
So I really like that insight. And I think probably not only for himself, but also for the disciples. I never thought about it before until you brought it up, that probably the disciples weren't going to get any rest as long as Jesus was with them either. Because like you said, wherever they go, the crowd follows. So maybe that was Jesus' way of saying, okay, I'm going to give you guys some alone time as well.
They're going to
see me, and I'm not leaving. I'm not on the boat. So they won't go following after you.
It's just the disciples who Jesus. Yeah.
And he needs it too. Like you said, yeah, he's tired as well. And especially as you read on now, and the Gospel of John actually tells us what happens immediately after this, and things kind of start to go sour. You know, it's not long after this that people actually start leaving Jesus. And of course, ultimately, all of this will end up leading to his suffering and death on the cross. So okay, that sounds like a good explanation. Everybody needs a little rest, and what better way to do that than to send the disciples off by themselves, and then Jesus goes off by himself as well. The thing that I came up with, Matt, was the fact that, like I said, things aren't looking good because this crowd is going to totally misinterpret what Jesus is doing here. And John will tell us that they want to make him into their king. And that's what really will drive the crowd away when he says, no, I'm not here to be your bread king. And maybe that's also why he sends the disciples away, because he doesn't want them to get infected with that kind of attitude that Jesus is all about taking care of our earthly needs. Not that he doesn't take care of our earthly needs. I really do believe what it says in the catechism when it says that he will provide for all of our bodily needs. And in that first article of the catechism, it goes into the list of all the things. So I believe that he provides those. But isn't what Jesus came for. And in fact, you know, he wouldn't have had to come down to heaven to do that. He could have done that up in heaven. He does do it up in heaven. No, what he's going to do is something much, much more significant. So that's the one thing that puzzled me. Give me a second here. I'll pull up my Bible and I'll share with you the other thing that really, really puzzled me. So Jesus, as you said, Matt, has gone up to the mountain to pray. And when evening came, the boat was out on the sea and he was alone on the land. And he saw that they were making headway painfully, for the wind was against them. And about the fourth hour of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. And here's the thing I don't understand. Mark tells us he meant to pass them by.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know.
Well, I mean, maybe just a few comments. Don't you find it exciting that even though he's on the land and they're on the sea, he still knows what they're doing and what's going on?
Yeah. Yeah. He knows that they're making headway painfully. The wind is against them. Yeah. Whether he can see them at a distance or he just knows. He's aware of their struggle.
So I find that a great comfort. I know Jesus is also off at a distance now, or at least that's how we think of it in terms of spatial relationships. He's in heaven. But yeah, he knows. He knows whatever you're going through right now, everyone who's listening to us. The other thing that I find really impressive is that he doesn't just sit up there and say, well, that's too bad. Gosh, I feel sorry for those guys out on there. Man, they should be up here on the mountain with me. Yeah. But no, immediately he sets out to help them. And I hope everyone listening realizes that's the absolute truth. Jesus right now has every intention of helping you, whatever it is you might be struggling with. And even if he has to walk on water to get to you, he will do that. And he can do that because he's the Almighty God. But now the question that is the puzzle, what does it mean he meant to pass by them? I thought the whole point was going out there to help them. Have you ever dealt with that passage before?
Apparently not. Yeah, apparently he wasn't going out to help them. That wasn't the only reason. I think it's kind of funny, you know, firstly, that you know, Jesus, he intended just to walk past them. If he was taking a shortcut, he didn't want to have to. They already took the boat, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
How else is he going to get across the sea? Well, he'd have to walk around the whole thing, which is going to take a whole lot longer. So he's taking a shortcut. He's going the short way. He was just going to pass by them. Why was he going to pass by them? I don't know, John, you know, that would have been quite a surprise when they got to the shore and here's Jesus standing there waiting for him though. Right. How did he get there? But that seems to be the intention. I guess what interests me too is why does he stop? You know, what prevents him from just passing by? They're crying out, they're terrified. And then he speaks to them. So I don't know. I think that's interesting. I wonder if they hadn't cried out, if they weren't terrified, you know, if things were, would Jesus keep going? Would things have been, they're doing fine. Things are hunky dory. I'm going to keep going. I don't know. And, you know, and then is that instructive for us to maybe cry out to the Lord too, when we're terrified, that we too would, you know, Lord, be with us, right? Don't pass us by. We need you. So I think it's kind of interesting. It seems like it's not until after they cry out, and part of it is fear that they think it's a ghost, but they cry out, and then finally he stops and talks with them.
So the where you're going there, so obviously I had a chance to do a lot of research on this since I actually preached on this text, so I have that advantage over you. And I wonder if people realize that it's not easy. It's not easy to preach. I think maybe people think we get up there and we kind of shake it out of our sleeve, as mm-hmm, they say. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. but generally, when you hear a pastor preach a sermon, he's done a lot of time studying the text, reading other commentaries and what have you. And so, of course, this issue is greatly debated, because I think everyone's puzzled. Why would Jesus want to pass you by? And one of the answers I read is pretty much similar to what you said. They drew an analogy to the story about Jesus and the two disciples on the road to Emmaus. Do you remember that story, Matt?
Oh, yeah, you bet. Yeah, post-resurrection, Jesus walking with those.
So they don't know that it's Jesus walking with them. And here's what it says. So they drew near to the village. So this is Jesus and these two other guys that don't know they're with Jesus. So they drew near to the village to which they were going. He acted as if he were going farther. So it's the same thing. It looks like Jesus is just going to leave them. Until, of course, they invite him to stay. In fact, they encourage him, come and have supper with us. So that may very well be the point, that Jesus will appear to be walking by, and he's just waiting for us to notice and to cry out. That's what he's waiting. And certainly the Bible says, you have not because you ask not. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. So that could be. Although, of course, as you already alluded, let me read those verses too. Because if that was the deal, if Jesus was trying to get them to pray to him, it didn't quite work out that way, did it?
Well, yeah, so they're just crying out in fear. They're not crying out necessarily, you know, in faith at this point, right? They think it's a ghost. They don't even know it's Jesus, right? They think it's a ghost. And yet I think Jesus has compassion on them in their moment of fear and terror as he's walking by.
But they saw him walking on the sea, they thought it was a ghost and cried out. For they all saw him and were terrified. So not a cry of faith, a cry of fear. And who wouldn't think it was a ghost? My goodness, it's somebody on the water. But you're right. What a good point, Matt. But immediately he spoke to them and said, take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid. So right there, if you ask me, that's worth your money right there. To know that even when we're terrified, even when we have doubts, Jesus isn't going to say, well, you fools, why don't you go to hell? No, he's going to say just what he says, take heart, it is I, do not be afraid. He knows the weakness of our flesh. And so, even in our terror, he would never abandon us. In fact, I suppose in our terror, he would even more forcibly, loudly, clearly proclaim the fact, hey, it is I, and when I'm with you, even though the storms are raging, you don't really have any reason to be afraid. And if you must be afraid, go ahead and be afraid. But trust me, I'm here. I'm going to take care of things. The other thing, though, that I discovered is maybe we're simply misinterpreting that word he meant to pass by. Let me share with you a couple Old Testament passages that maybe reflect on this. And you'll know these passages right away when I say them. You remember Moses, right? And God mm-hmm. was going to show himself to Moses. And what it says in Exodus 34 is the Lord, are you ready? Passed by him and proclaimed, the Lord, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. Weren't you telling me earlier that you were, was it Elijah or Elisha that you just got dealing with?
Oh, Elijah, yeah.
Okay.
Old Testament reading recently and how an angel appears to Elijah when he is down and out and just afraid and exhausted.
So next week, you want to do that?
Sure. Do that? Yeah. Okay. It's a great account. It's one that we don't probably reflect on too often, but I think it's worth giving some thought.
Well, and it ties in with this phrase, he passed by, because you remember, and I don't know where this story fits into your story, but you know, there's the story of Elijah, and he's in this cave, and he's hiding out because he's scared. He's frightened again, just like the disciples.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And of course, it says that the Lord passed by Elijah. What is it? First, I think, in a wind, and then in a fire, and then finally in a still, small voice. But it's that same phrase, passed by. So I'm thinking it's not an English phrase, right? Because when we say passed by, we mean someone's going ahead of us and leaving us behind. I think that's the essence, leaving us behind. I think this is more of a Hebraic way of speaking, which simply says that someone wants to get ahead of us so we can see them, as you kind of alluded to earlier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The point is, and he doesn't want to leave the disciples behind, but the point is they're heading into the storm. Their eyes are focused on the wind of the storm, and somehow he has to catch up with them because, you know, he started on the land, but he has to not just catch up with them. He has to kind of get ahead of them a little bit so they will actually notice that he's there. So anyway, does that make any sense to you?
Well, yeah. And I think when we look at it that way, it's when God has done that in the past, it's out of mercy. You know, those examples with Elijah and with Moses as well, you know, that a sign of his presence and even his mercy, that he allows them to even have perhaps a glimpse of him and to know his presence. And perhaps, yeah, here Jesus, as he passes by them and perhaps even goes ahead of them to make his presence known to them, that even in the midst of the wind and the waves, he's Emmanuel, God with us.
To me, the parallel is we get so focused on our trials and our problems, and that's where our attention is pointed. And I think sometimes maybe we just need to slow down a little bit and give Jesus a chance to catch up with us and maybe to get in front of us a little bit and to do just like you said, to speak his word to us. And then we realize, oh, okay, this is a scary situation. No one's, man, if you're on the ocean, how many hours did it take you to get from us over there? That was a whole Atlantic Ocean you crossed over.
Oh, yeah, over 7 hours, yep.
Yeah, and at any moment, if that plane collapses, no, there's no place to land. You're just out there. And, of course, you did have your flotation device, didn't you? Did they point the flotation device out to
you? Yes, your seat can seat cover. The bottom of your seat contains a flotation device. And also, you have your own personal life jacket, too, that you can blow up yourself.
Oh, really?
So what's there to worry about, John? We'll be fine in the North Atlantic.
Well, see, I'm just reflecting because you get the same speech when you fly from St. Louis to Minnesota. I'm thinking, I don't know where you're going to land, that I'm going to need a flotation device. There's not many big lakes in Iowa, as far as I know. But there, yes, that would actually be a helpful thing. So anyway, that's the thing. It is a dangerous, we're all in dangerous positions. In fact, that's what occurred to me, Matt. People ask me, why is it that we have problems? Okay. And I'm thinking, don't you know where you're at? You're in the middle of the sea. Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the sea isn't a bad place to be. Flying over the sea, that's not a bad thing to do. You got to get there to get to England. But on the other hand, it's always a dangerous place to be. It's never a safe place to be. It's a place where a storm could come up at any time. Your plane could crash. Your boat could capsize. I can't swim. Do you swim at all, Matt?
Not enough to stay afloat in the Atlantic.
Yeah, but. Well, there you go. That's the problem. You're not going to be able to tread water long enough to survive. The sea is a very, very dangerous place to be, which I believe is why in the book of Revelation, one of the key descriptions of heaven is there is no what? Do you know that passage, Matt? There is no sea.
Flotation devices?
No. You won't need them because there is no sea in heaven. See, the dangerous places are gone, but not here. I hope everybody realizes here we are still in a place of danger. Do we go to 27? We go to 27 minutes now, don't we, Matt?
Yes.
Okay. It's been so long since we recorded. I can't even remember how this show is. So anyway, to go back, this is why there's problems and troubles. It's where we're at. That's why we're not planning on spending our whole eternity here. We will spend a life here, that's true. But we've got a destination And here's the cool thing. We are in a plane. We are in a boat. You know, we're not just in the sea on our own. We have the church. In fact, my old church, if you looked up at the ceiling, it was built with those big wooden arches to look like it was the bottom of a boat. But here's what's even better. We're not just on a boat. We're on a boat with who?
With Jesus.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is what's really cool, if I could read verse 51. And he got into the boat with them, and the wind ceased, and they were utterly astounded. And as I was preaching this, it occurred to me, you know, he didn't need to get into the boat with them. He was having no problem standing on the water. He could have calmed the sea there, you know, as he stood on the water. But can you see this thing about Jesus is he just really, really wants to be with us because he really, really loves and cares for us. And he knows it's so much easier for him to comfort us when he's with us and present with us, which again is a good plug for just keep listening to the Wrestling with the Basics, or better yet, probably go to church, okay? Join the rest of your fellow believers who are also in the boat with us in this very dangerous sea, and rejoice in the fact that the Lord says, where two or more are gathered, lo, there I am in the midst of you. So there you go. And any comments you want to make about that, Matt?
Yeah, just the sea, you're in the boat, and like you said, we are making headway painfully sometimes, like the disciples, but that doesn't go unnoticed by Jesus. In fact, he's in the boat with us, and thanks be to God for that. Without that comfort, wow, in this life, if you think you're alone in that boat and making painful headway, and you don't know Jesus, and you don't know he's with you, well, how terrifying, right? As terrifying it would be to be stranded in the Atlantic, but he is, and we have that good news as Christians to share with others.
And man, I really am glad you said that, because maybe you know people that do feel like that, and they're making headway painfully, and they are not aware that Jesus is with them. So if you know anybody like that, let them know. Let them know they are not alone. Let them know they're not alone because you're with them, and you love and you care for them. But even more importantly, because we can't really do much about the storm, I'm sorry. But the Lord Jesus can, and he does, and he certainly will deliver us. This has been Wrestling with the Basics.
Showing support for KFUO is now easier than ever. You can sport a KFUO shirt, swag, or even socks by visiting our online store. Go to KFUO.org/store and order high-quality KFUO-branded merch. You no longer need to wait for our annual share-a-thon for a chance to show your KFUO spirit. Visually share and wear this ministry out in the world by checking out our selection. Every purchase helps to support our proclamation of Christ for you, anytime, anywhere. Go to KFUO.org/store.